It's 8 o'clock.
Good morning. This is Northern Light for Tuesday, April 23rd. I'm Monica Sandresky.
And I'm Todd Moe.
The head of Columbia University is the latest college president that Congresswoman Elise Stefanik is pushing to resign amid pro-Palestinian demonstrations on campus.
So there have been anti-Jewish protests.
I didn't get to finish my sentence. So what I was going to say was there were protests that were called that were...
That's not what you were asked. You were asked, were there any anti-Jewish protests? And you said no.
Governor Hochul's favorability rating is the lowest it's been since she took office. We'll have the results of a new poll coming up. Also, students from SUNY ESF participated in a controlled burn at a wild forest in the Finger Lakes region.
The objectives that we have out here to restore prairie flora and do some benefit for pollinators and restore a vegetation type that is disappearing from the landscape without the presence of disturbance like fire.
And we check in with Kitty O'Neill with the Cornell Cooperative Extension about the uptick in bird flu in springtime and how we can help protect our backyard flocks. All that's coming up on Northern Light. Stick with us.
Broadcast of Northern Light here on North Country Public Radio is supported by Fisher, Bissett, Muldowney, and McArdle attorneys and counselors at law with offices in Malone, Tupper Lake, and Saranac Lake. 800-941-5001. And by Adirondack Foundation, making grants to nonprofits that address community issues of childcare, attainable housing, career pathways, basic needs, and more. AdirondackFoundation.org.
This is Northern Light. I'm Monica Sandresky.
And I'm Todd Moe. North Country Congresswoman Elise Stefanik is leading the push to get the president of Columbia University to resign. This comes amid pro-Palestinian demonstrations on campus and heightened tensions around the country over the war between Israel and Hamas. Emily Russell reports.
Since the war began back in October, students on college campuses around the U.S. have held both pro-Palestine and pro-Israel demonstrations. Also during that time, the Anti-Defamation League reported a 360% increase in anti-Semitic incidents in the U.S. In November, Columbia University in New York City established a task force to combat anti-Semitism. And then last week, students began to gather on campus in a pro-Palestinian demonstration. The university's president and members of its board testified in front of Congress last week. Congresswoman Elise Stefanik led that questioning. She pushed Columbia's president, Manoush Shafiq, about her prior testimony that the protests on campus weren't anti-Jewish.
Dr. Shafiq, you realize that at some of these events, the slurs and the chants have been F the Jews, death to Jews, yep. F Israel. No safe place, death to the Zionist state, Jews out. You don't think those are anti-Jewish?
Completely anti-Jewish, completely unacceptable.
So you changed your testimony on
horrible.
That issue as well? So there have been anti-Jewish protests.
I didn't get to finish my sentence. So what I was going to say was there were protests that were called that were...
That's not what you were asked. You were asked, were there any anti-Jewish protests? And you said no.
So the protest was not labeled as an anti-Jewish protest.
I'm not asking what it was labeled.
It was labeled as an anti-Israeli government policy.
The question wasn't what it was labeled.
But anti-Semitic incidents happen, or anti-Semitic things were said.
As tensions heightened on Columbia's campus last week, the NYPD intervened, arresting more than 100 protesters on Thursday. Yesterday, President Shafiq moved all classes online. Governor Kathy Hochul visited the campus and said she spoke both with students and staff about the freedom of speech and about campus safety for all. Here she is in a video posted to X, formerly known as Twitter.
Students are scared. They're afraid to walk on campus. They don't deserve that. They deserve to be in an environment that is free from discrimination as required by state human rights laws.
New York's Republican delegation in Congress, led by Stefanik, published a letter on Monday calling for Columbia's president to resign. Stefanik led a similar push back in December after questioning the presidents of Harvard, UPenn, and MIT about anti-Semitism on college campuses. Just days after that questioning, the president of UPenn resigned. Stefanik tweeted, quote, one down, two to go, referring to the college president's resignation. Less than a month later, Harvard's president resigned. According to the Associated Press, there are pro-Palestinian encampments on other college campuses around the country right now, including at NYU, MIT, Yale, and the University of Michigan. Emily Russell, North Country Public Radio.
Property owners in Watertown could face a nearly 20% increase in taxes in the coming year. According to WWNY-TV, the city is dealing with a $3.5 million budget gap, which is expected to double the following year. To help close that gap, Watertown city manager is proposing a 19% property tax increase. The city council received the budget proposal over the weekend and is expected to negotiate the financial details in upcoming budget hearings.
Senator Chuck Schumer was at Fort Drum yesterday to call for more funding for its fire department. According to a press release from Schumer, the Army base near Watertown received just 25% of the funding it requested for its fire department last year. That department serves the 15,000 Army members on base and regularly responds to other local emergencies. According to Schumer, the budget shortfall has led firefighters on base to have to borrow some personal protective gear. Senator Schumer wrote to the Army Secretary requesting Fort Drum's fire department receive the full funding it requested, as well as new rescue truck for the squad. You're listening to Northern Light on North Country Public Radio. It's 7 minutes past eight. Good morning. I'm Todd Moe.
And I'm Monica Sandreski. Coming up in just a few minutes, a conversation with Kitty O'Neill of the Cornell Cooperative Extension about the uptick in avian flu during springtime. That's in just a few minutes right here on Northern Light.
Music by Sterling Brownell out of Old Forge. Northern Light is supported by Long Run Wealth, an SEC registered investment advisor in Lake Placid, providing comprehensive wealth management, retirement, and financial planning solutions. LongRunWealth.com. And the Greenhouse at St. Lawrence University, welcoming all to the 12th annual North Country Folk Fest on Friday, April 26th from 3 to 11, featuring live music, food, local vendors, and more.
A new Siena College poll finds that Governor Kathy Hochul has her worst ever favorability and job approval ratings. As Karen DeWitt reports, the news comes just as Hochul is declaring victory in getting her agenda approved in the state budget.
Hochul, who has never scored above a 50% approval rating since she's been governor, now has her lowest favorable rating since Siena College began tracking her in 2021. Only 40% view her positively and 49% view her negatively. Siena pollster Steve Greenberg says the governor's job approval ratings, which were always higher than her individual popularity, are also declining.
Right now, only 45% of New Yorkers approve of the job Hochul is doing as governor. 49% disapprove. It's the first time more voters have disapproved of the job that she's doing than approve since she's been governor.
Answers from registered Democrats and Republicans were predictable, with the vast majority of Democrats saying Hochul was doing a good job and most Republicans saying they disapprove of the governor and her job performance. The poll found that independents, though, who are a growing part of the electorate, disliked the governor by a 2-to-1 margin. The survey was conducted a few days ago when the governor and the legislature were in the throes of budget negotiations and news outlets were reporting on another late state budget. Hochul is claiming a number of wins in the new spending plan, which was approved over the weekend, including an affordable housing package and a crackdown on retail theft. Greenberg says if the governor publicizes those accomplishments, she could still turn those numbers around.
I assume that the governor is going to go on a mini tour over the next few weeks trying to sell the items that were in her in this budget, this final pass budget. We'll see if that has any resonance with voters. But right now, maybe it's the migrant issue. Maybe it's crime. Maybe it's the economy. Maybe it's just voters are not happy right now. They are cranky.
Hochul is not the only incumbent politician faring poorly in the polls. New York City Mayor Eric Adams and President Joe Biden have also declined in the public's estimation. Biden is also underwater with voters, with his approval rating at 40%. Right now, he maintains a 10-digit lead against Republican former President Donald Trump for the 2024 presidential race. However, Biden won Blue New York by 20 percentage points over Trump during the last election in 2020. In Albany, I'm Karen DeWitt for the New York Public News Network.
A group of students from SUNY ESF is learning how to fight fire with, well, fire. Students participated in a controlled burn at a wild forest in the Finger Lakes region. New York Public News Network's Eva Pukach was there.
Forest and Fire Ecology Professor Andrew Vanderjagt led the group. It's the second prescribed burn he's done with ESF students. Last semester, students took part as part of their classwork. Today, it's a smaller group made of all volunteers. He says there's several benefits of a prescribed burn in forest management.
The objectives that we have here out here to restore prairie flora and you know do some benefit for pollinators and restore a vegetation type that is disappearing from the landscape without the presence of disturbance like fire.
Donned in a Nomex flame-resistant suit, leather gloves, and hard hat, Jade Homan, a master's student at ESF, lit the first flame.
I was anticipating not a huge overwhelm. Just based on our fall burn, it was, kind of underwhelming. So this is great. This is working out really nice.
The students rotate through different positions. The ignitions team lighting the burn lines and practicing different burn techniques like strip heading and ring fire. The holding team uses metal tools and mats to stamp out any fire that gets out of control. Others focus on making weather quality measurements as the fire blazes through the plot. Lily John, a senior at ESF, participated in her first controlled burn.
It's definitely, there's an element of fear because it's fire and you know inherently that it's dangerous, but there's definitely a thrill to it and knowing that how much impact we can have on the land. It is an important tool for preventing wildfires from getting worse because wildfire is natural, but because of the suppression, that's why the wildfires have become so devastating. So using it as a tool rather than letting it get out of our control.
A California study found the risk of high-intensity wildfires was reduced by 60% in areas previously treated by low-intensity fires like a prescribed burn. In Tully, I'm Eva Pukach for the New York Public News Network.
You're listening to Northern Light right here on North Country Public Radio. I'm Todd Moe.
And I'm Monica Sandreski. Coming up in just a minute, the uptick in bird flu during springtime and what we can do to protect our backyard flocks. That's coming up in just a minute. Then stick around after the show for Bird Note coming up at 8:42. But first, Todd has a look at the weather for us.
Partly to mostly sunny today, maybe an isolated rain shower in the St. Lawrence Valley or along eastern Lake Ontario. Windy with gusts out of the south-southwest today, up to 40 miles per hour. Cloudy, maybe a light rain shower tonight as well, lows around 40. And then tomorrow it's going to be cooler. The Weather Service predicting a light wintry mix on and off throughout the day tomorrow, about a 70% chance of a mix of snow, sleet, rain, depending on how cold it gets. Highs expected in the 40s, near 50 tomorrow. We'll see sunshine Thursday and Friday, gradually milder temperatures, a high near 60. By Saturday, could see a high in the 70s by Monday. And right now in Canton, sunshine, 51 degrees.
If you've been perusing the hatchery cataloged by baby chicks for your backyard chicken coop, you may have noticed some breeds are unavailable when you try to order them. Kitty O'Neill says that's because some breeders probably lost their flock to avian flu. O'Neill is with the Cornell Cooperative Extension, and we check in with her every month to find out what's happening on North Country farms. This time, she thought it was important that we talk about bird flu.
We always see an uptick in avian influenza outbreaks or reports in the spring because there are a number of migrating species, chiefly waterfowl, diving and dabbling ducks, geese, and swans, who can carry the virus without getting sick. And so they can spread it everywhere they go. And so they often bring it with them from the south, and we see an uptick of outbreaks on farms in the spring, beginning in February, and we're kind of partway through it now. It's April. New outbreaks may taper off in May and June as there's fewer migrating species.
Have you heard of outbreaks on North Country poultry farms?
I haven't. It's never out of the realm of possibilities. And I did look up, there have been several outbreaks on poultry, chickens, turkeys, commercial or backyard flocks in New York State. There may have been one or two in the last couple of years in a couple of our North Country counties. I haven't seen anything this spring.
And when those outbreaks do happen, there's usually a lot of government support for those farms, too.
Unfortunately, we have a lot of people working for the USDA and its subparts who have become really good at helping farms deal with this over the last 10 or 15 years. They can help farms deal with big outbreaks. Unfortunately, there's birds to dispose of because it can wipe out a whole house of layers or broilers very quickly. And of course, you want to do that well. You want to do that correctly, limit the spread to everything, and be as hygienic as possible about all of it. So there's government agencies that can help deal with that kind of thing. With smaller outbreaks, like a backyard flock, for example, I think it's a good idea to report it and get some guidance on how to deal with it yourself or with a little bit of help. And that also informs some of those same agencies about where these outbreaks are happening, what species was it, and they may have some follow-up to do. In fact, I'm sure they would.
Well, and you're touching on it there. Who all does avian flu affect?
Yeah, so it's primarily carried by these ducks and geese and swans, but I've been learning that it's appearing in some other bird species, too, as they encounter the virus in the environment or perhaps scavenge on a sick or dying bird of some sort. It's showed up in some of those species, hawks, eagles, owls, and even crows and grackles and pigeons. It's not impossible for these birds to be sick, but it's a lot less likely. There's a lot less reports of those other birds. But that contributes to the spread, for sure.
Including the latest news in the last month was dairy cattle.
Yeah, that's why it's really in the news, I think, because that's a new development. I don't think we've had that before this spring. But it started, I think, Texas and Kansas had a couple of dairy herds outbreaks, and it was identified. One of the farms even had a couple of workers test positive, super minor symptoms in humans. But that causes even the CDC to pay attention, in addition to all those USDA agencies. We know how these viruses can shift and change a little bit, right, from our own experiences. But this one appears to maybe have done that, where we haven't seen it in dairy cattle before, but now we have had one herd in New York State become a little bit sick. Fortunately, the symptoms are less severe in dairy cattle, but it does, you know, depress milk production for a while. But it's not quite as devastating as it is for a poultry farm.
How does it spread?
So these migrating birds can leave behind feces or saliva. It can be encountered by other animals or car tires that then track it onto a farm,
Oh, yeah.
You know. So it moves around that way. It can move from farm to farm if we move animals from one farm to another. In fact, I know that the USDA has put some import restrictions on cattle from affected states into unaffected states. So that's great. Yeah, so mostly it's from birds flying around. It can be tracked by people or vehicles, which is why you may encounter more signs on your neighbor farms now. You know, the public is not welcome to visit, or no visitors, or you can visit, but you have to put on coveralls and walk through this footbath first. Biosecurity is always a priority on farms, especially poultry farms. I think they have some additional risks compared to dairy farms in that way. It's important to just honor those requests, because we don't want to, we want our North Country farms to remain free from this problem.
You're mentioning it there, but how do we protect against infection?
So, again, all those biosecurity measures are going to be important on farms. You know, sometimes backyard flock people, I know I'm one of them, over the past couple of years, we've considered keeping our flocks indoors for a little bit extended time in the spring until migration is over. I don't know for sure if how much difference that makes, but, you know, it's kind of a harmless practice to try. There is a lot of information available from the USDA and other agencies. If you're curious, you could just Google avian influenza backyard flocks, and you'll find a fact sheet about what the recommended practices are. And it probably includes things like don't bring a suspected sick animal onto your, you know, into your flock. It may suggest buying chicks from reputable suppliers and things like that. And to limit a little bit of access from wild birds for a time.
Does it affect eggs that people eat?
That's the cool thing. They're totally keeping an eye on the food system as a result of all this, right? And so far, there is absolutely no risk to food products produced. So far, it has not been detected.
Good. Safe to eat eggs.
Yes, that's
good,
right.
Good to know. Good. Good. You've also said, though, too, I mean, this is a quickly developing
it is
field for strategies and that sort of thing.
It is. I didn't know until a few days ago about the vaccines that are being developed. There's already a duck vaccine available in France that's been working really well. Here in the U.S., we have a poultry vaccine in development that they expect, it looks good, I guess, and they expect it to maybe be rolled out in 18 months or so. And there's the very early discussions on a cattle vaccine for avian flu as well. And then, you know, the USDA keeps track of outbreaks. So there's news about outbreaks every week somewhere. You can kind of keep an eye on where it's showing up. DEC and USDA and even local health departments are paying attention to it. And they have some, you know, surveillance and reporting mechanisms in place. So there's new developments every week right now. We're learning new things. It's a biological system. It's never the same one day to the next. It's very dynamic. We'll continue to learn new things going forward, I think.
Kitty O'Neill is the Agricultural Climate Resiliency Specialist with the Cornell Cooperative Extension. You're listening to Northern Light right here on North Country Public Radio. I'm Monica Sandreski here with Todd Moe. It's just about 8:25, and we want to let you know about a few of the events coming up throughout the community in the coming weeks, including tonight. It is the latest an edition of the Howell Story Slam. That is a live storytelling event, live unscripted storytelling competition told in communities throughout the North Country. And tonight, NCPR and the Adirondack Center for Writing, who host it, will be in Morristown. Anyone can sign up to tell a story on the theme, which this time is risky business. Or you can come and just listen, enjoy a beer or food at the bar. This will be in Morristown tonight, starting at 7 o'clock at the Iron Horse Grill. That's the Iron Horse Grill in Morristown for the Howell Story Slam tonight at 7 o'clock.
If you're in the mood for some music and singing, Dan Duggan and Peggy Lynn invite you to join them at Tawny this coming Saturday, the 27th, from 1 to 3:30. They say bring an acoustic instrument and or your voice and join them for an afternoon of tunes and songs. That's at Tawny, Traditional Arts in Upstate New York in downtown Canton from 1 to 3:30. Join them for an afternoon of music making, and Dan Duggan guarantees that it's going to lift your spirit. Dan, we're going to hold you to that. Community Jam and Sing with Dan Duggan and Peggy Lynn, Saturday starting at 1 o'clock at Tawny in Canton.
I think Dan Duggan can't help but lift people's spirits. I find that to be true. Also coming up the first weekend in May, it's the Kentucky Derby Social that's happening at Sackett's Harbor. The Kentucky Derby Social will feature Southern-inspired hors d'oeuvres from embellished catering, live music, a silent auction, chances to win great prizes. The Kentucky Derby will be projected onto one of the walls of the Sackett's Harbor Ballroom. You can find out more from sackettsharborballroom.com. That's Saturday, May 4th. And of course, that is Star Wars Day. And the folks at the Ogdensburg Public Library will be celebrating Star Wars Day on May 4th with a craft for kids to make lightsabers and shoot stormtroopers to defend the library. It's for ages 5 and up. You can find out more from the Ogdensburg Public Library. That's coming up Saturday, May 4th from 11 to 11:45.
This coming weekend, Saturday and Sunday, you're going to see some folks out picking up trash along roadsides, mainly in St. Lawrence County. It's the fourth annual Trash Dash 5K presented by the St. Lawrence County Youth Bureau. Adults and young folks will be walking, picking up roadside trash. You can register and select one of five county locations on Saturday. They'll be gathering in Governor, Rensselaer Falls, and Potsdam at 9 a.m. And then on Sunday, the 28th, walkers will meet at 1 o'clock in the afternoon in Messina and Ogdensburg. And last year, there were about over 80 young folks who attended, and they picked up over 1,100 pounds of garbage in all five locations in St. Lawrence County. So hats off to those trash dashers.
And I also want to invite everyone to head to ncpr.org and check out the photo of the day. This is such a cool project where your neighbors send in their photos and a different one is featured every day. The latest one is from Kristen Eaton out of Wilmington. And her photo is the start of the Little River Ramble Canoe Race in Canton. You can see folks on the Little River, just coming out of a bend, folks in canoes and kayaks. It's such a great photo that really gets at a little bit of a slice of life here in the North Country. You can check that out now at ncpr.org. And we'd also love for you to send in your photo of the day. You can also do it at our website, ncpr.org, and you just might see it featured on the website. I should say, too, that that Little River Scramble is reminding me of the upcoming Canton Canoe Weekend. That's Friday, May 3rd through Sunday, May 5th. You can register for that at cantoncanoeweekend.org. They will be raffling a slipstream watercraft Wee Lassie canoe package and a paddle, handmade clothes, a charcuterie board. Lots to enjoy there. Find out more at cantoncanoeweekend.org. That's coming up Friday, May 3rd through Sunday, May 5th.
So, Monica,
Yes, Todd.
Where are you going to be next Saturday?
Oh, you know exactly where I'm going to be. Todd and I are hosting a children's story hour this Saturday at the Messina Public Library. We are so excited about it. North Country Children's authors Maxwell Eaton III, Jessica Laurel Kane out of Brant Lake, and Rebecca Donnelly from Potsdam will be there to read from their works and host children's activities, host interactive activities for kids. That's coming up this Saturday from 10 to noon at the Messina Public Library. It's free. We would love to see you there. And as a preview, we'll be hearing from each of the authors this week on Northern Light starting tomorrow morning. So don't forget to tune in to Northern Light tomorrow between 8 and 8:30 right here on North Country Public Radio. And we'd love to see you Saturday morning for a children's story hour with our North Country children's authors from 10 to noon at the Messina Public Library. I'm Monica Sandreski with Todd Moe. Be well.